And welcome, 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 dear listeners. Partially starting like 6 minutes without my, if I can call it my accomplice. Well, Helmut would technically call me his accomplice. But obviously for now, we'll be each other's accomplices in, you know, in each other's particular sort of like realms in terms of reality. But welcoming you specifically, dear listeners, to your Tuesday edition of The Home Run. As mentioned, me starting off in the first half, or not the first half, but the first part of today's particular particular programming, and obviously where you can listen to us from whichever particular platform that you are accessing us from. We welcome you to the Tuesday, this particular Tuesday edition. Now, do remember, dear listeners, you can access us through the Eagle FM applications, which is free to download. It is a tiny, tiny download. Just to let you know, it is a tiny download. Now, it's below 100 meg, most definitely. But you can access the Eagle FM platform. Doesn't matter if it's through the Android platform or through the particular Apple platform itself. You can access us there and have a listen. Yes, if you're Android like me, sometimes you walk into a few snares. For example, like there is, you know, a pending update that has to be accessed. And, don't worry. Keep it cool. Guys, you know, like with anything else in the world in terms of, which are applications and, digital based platforms, you know, things obviously sometimes needs a little bit of a update factor to be, you know, to be considered. But besides the Eagle FM application, you can obviously also listen to us through the Eagle FM website. You just have a good, you know, Google search right there. You can reach us. And lastly, obviously, and not least, is through the, you know, through the various frequencies they can find across the country in terms of just the map that we've got either in the Village ePaper platform or in on our social media platforms. You will see the frequency map. Just consult it for the various particular geographic locations. Wherever you find yourself, you can access it through there. So, getting through that particular mouthful, and obviously getting into a start with today's discussion. If you have seen our poster, dear listeners, this obviously means that we are going through the second of the State of the Region addresses. This particular one takes us to Kunene. This is obviously sort of like to let you know, these addresses happened before and after the launch of the National Development Plan. If you don't know, and actually I didn't read this particular script only after Helmut and I started planning for this particular segment, which technically our planning started since last week for the segment. We just had to coordinate, when we would start with the State of the Region addresses. Hey, Helmut.
Dwight.
Just highlighting to the listeners specifically that we didn't take into consideration that actually the State of the Region addresses occurred before and after the NDP6 launch, which was in the middle of July.
Yeah.
And they technically sort of like, you can look at it in terms of a realm of, or not in the realm, in the aspect of clumping or clustering these particular engagements together. Because the funny thing is when we started with, when I looked at this Kunene region address.
Yeah.
And it's a 3-hour movie. First hour and 20 minutes was of other people, specifically the National Planning Director General. National
Planning Councillor.
And a councillor, yes.
Yeah.
It's interesting that when those particular engagements took place, that sometimes, okay, the one we started off with yesterday was Omaheke. The youth activist, she cited from a youth perspective, but yeah, when the governor began, he started from a broader developmental aspect, and he touched on certain particular things based upon the urban and rural communities, agriculture, and, for example, sorting out certain particular things right there.
Yeah.
The contrast in comparison, and unfortunately, I should not be comparing because we're supposed to be. we must now be us journalists. Helmut, yes, was the funny thing. Uh-huh. if you've never done research and methodology as a subject on university, now, where the subject will tell you, you should be looking at things from an objective perspective and not be subjective. Now, the first thing I did in terms of these two first addresses that we've obviously touched on was I did the mistake of comparing. Now, this is not about being subjective. Yes, to an extent, but the comparison was based upon the difference in the needs of each region.
You did your comparison. I didn't mind.
Yeah, I did it anyway because it happened automatically.
It does.
Yes.
I took notes though.
I also took notes. And much of it is.
This is all the notes. I took.
Okay. I mean, we won't mention how big that those notes are. Should I show you just what is health?
Just health?
Just health, which is the first hour of that address. From here. Ne?
Mm-hmm.
That's where Kunene starts.
Oh man.
All the way to here.
You're supposed to summarize, not.
I summarized, but.
Write the whole script.
But my whole squiggles, my squiggles, that's my handwriting, guys.
Spread over.
It's literally a page and a half, guys. So just so that you know, and that is just the health sector for, it's, you bought sparkling water.
I was in a hurry. I had to go to get to NTN.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't even see that.
No, sparkling water is nice. Until, you know, other people start asking you for water, and then when you tell them this is sparkling, then you should see them, you know, they pull that same contorted expression that you've got. They're who drinks sparkling water?
Yeah, like, look, when I'm drinking water, I just want to drink water. Minus any.
But it's actually an acquired taste. You will start growing into the thing.
Yeah.
You will realize when you don't want to eat something, like there's sometimes that taste that you get to eat something salty. You want to eat salt.
Mm-hmm.
Because you either drank too much coffee or you had too much cool drink or you had too much of a sweet thing.
Yeah.
And you wish to just change your taste buds. So then that is a good sort of like middle ground, that particular drink. Sparkling water. I'm not.
Believe me.
I should send invoices to all the sparkling drink water, sparkling water manufacturers, because you know I inadvertently sort of like gave away.
It started
personal preference in terms of some retail products. But yeah. So the comparison happens naturally. What was your comparison before I get into mine?
I was basically more like looking at similar talking points that we also observed in the, you are basically looking for similarities and differences in the talking points in terms of the state of the region address from the Omaheke discussion that we had yesterday and the Kunene, which is now we are. Yeah, which is something that we, which is today's topic.
Yeah.
Now, this, two lines that are, you know, like, yay, me type short that I have on my piece of paper.
Helmut, now, don't mention how long it is.
Now, this was in a conversation with the counselor.
Yeah.
Now, this was in a question that sort of like that took me back to you know to the youth activist of yesterday's discussion from the Omaheke State of the Region address. They were looking at this was basically about communication and also basically two things. It was basically communication in general.
Yeah.
And because from the communication, that's where, you know, that's the planning phase, which then takes you into the execution phase of all the plans that you made. The problem is, this is one of those situations where the gentleman conducting the interview at this point, it's just that low key wants us to face the elephant in the room in a way that we solve our problems. That, what is the best way to solve or more like to execute our plans, in a way that we don't look at each other's, you know, differences? And this is not just, tribal differences, something that goes beyond that. Mm. But, the two points that were made, you know, that were emphasized in the differences were age group differences and political party differences that, A lot of people, if you belong to party A, for example, and you are in leadership position, say governor or council position, I belong to party B, I'm most likely going to come up with a lot of different images of how, of how our conversation is going to go. Even though I know that, the concern I have when I'm approaching you, that concern is, it's a social concern, developmental concern. It's not a political party difference concern. Mm. But, more often, we center it around that. It's either I'm scared to talk to you because you belong to a different political party. But then again, you are the right man. You are in that position where I, as a citizen, I'm supposed to talk to, to bring these concerns to you. But
as long as it's not the fear.
Not
the OIS mining discussion, because there it was actually proven in that report, remember?
Yeah.
By fellow politicians.
Exactly.
That the local councillor on the ground wanted all information, every activity that takes place there in that OIS discussion regarding the lithium mining, all information should move through him. But remember what was the biggest concern there?
Mm-hmm.
Was that the traditional authority didn't...
They have a communication issue.
Yeah.
A terrible one.
The mining stakeholders only spoke to the traditional authorities. They didn't talk to the local political councillor or the local political person, individual there.
Yeah. Now, this is then where... that's where the, a lot of problems that were sort of like discussed, especially with the councillor here. And that really took my attention because the communication here goes both ways.
Mm.
It's either I'm afraid to talk to you as a councillor or to you as a governor to bring my village's concern.
Because might be of a party.
Yeah, because you are from a different political party.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's either I'm scared of you because you are from a different political party, or it's either you don't listen to me because I'm from a different political party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is something the governor also said, because he said his region is probably, according to him, the most politically split or politically divisive or politically divided region.
Yeah.
And he actually wants to bring, this particular...
bring them together.
Yeah, this gelling mechanism. But if it's been there before him, it'll be there during his particular stay there.
Let me give you a very interesting example. In the 1960s, Singapore, I think there was some kind of a tribal issue that's, that sprang up in some parts of Singapore, and Singapore is,
I think I know which one. Yeah. It was because of the Chinese immigrants.
Yeah, because they have different ethnicities. You have Malays, you have Chinese, and you have different, one guy described it as Asia's, melting pot.
Yeah.
Where a lot of different Asians basically come together in one place. But the thing is, they had a lot of tribal tensions back in the 60s that it ended up in it became physical, it became very violent, and a lot of people were hurt. The government decided to take over housing projects and then distributed they built these houses and distributed them in a way that was intentionally mixing different tribes. So that,
so they forced the integration.
They were basically saying, whether you like it or not, we are in one country. The guy that you hate is gonna be your neighbor. If you get into a fight, we're gonna call the police. Whether you like it or not, you are doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the interesting thing is, obviously, the government took over the housing projects. And then after that, they built the houses and intentionally distributed them in a way that, they had, they did not have in one block one tribe. So they had, they made sure that, the distribution of these houses were given, if house five belong to a Gavango, the next one is either going to be a Damara, you have a Herero here, you have a Vambu here, you have a Kalari here. So, and guess what's gonna happen? One, you're in close proximity. Even if you adults hate the guts out of each other, your kids don't know that. They're gonna start playing together.
Well, except for the exception of Rwanda, Hamoud.
They tried
that thing in Rwanda, and Rwanda is most the ugliest version of such a thing, but here's the thing.
Rwanda started with a radio station, right?
I know.
We have to be very careful.
I know, but apparently the hatred in the Rwanda scenario. Remember when you and I looked deeper into that thing?
Yeah.
In the Rwanda context, it got to such a point that, okay, what we did not look at, yeah, Mahmoud, was the historical animosity between the groups under French colonialism.
Yeah.
Because the discussions, historians have cited that the Tutsis were sort of like the favored tribe to work with by the French administrators.
Yeah.
They empowered them in everything that seemed administrative, in a managerial way that
it can easily be misconstrued as colluding with the, yeah, with the occupiers.
And then the Hutus sort of like misinterpreted this as that the French considered these, you know, this other group as
superior.
As a superior group.
Oh,
and
boy.
If you remember when we cited the radio station, the term cockroach that they used for the Tutsis,
yeah,
came from a pre-independence term or a pre-independence perspective or perception that had been mulling around there for so long when the French were still in charge that it was never really gotten rid of. You know, national unity was never really achieved in that scenario.
Okay, so after the French withdrew...
Yeah, after they pulled out of Rwanda.
After they got out of Rwanda, was it the French or the Belgians?
I would put both, but yeah. Technically, the Belgians should not exist because Belgium was started with... by their first king was Napoleon's little brother or something like that.
Oh, dear. Now, that's...
and Leopold makes the whole Zaire, the two Congos, basically his own little personal farm.
Yeah, personal farm.
Like, what?
Yeah. A farm that's like 100 times bigger than his country.
A farm that's 2 times bigger than the continent his country is in.
Oh, jeez. What happens then is, when the French and the Belgians withdraw, that animosity is not addressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now you have all this tension still simmering between the Tutsis and the Hutus. And then the Hutus looks at it in a way that, okay, the masters or a bunch of guys that were protecting you economically, military are not here anymore. So we're just taking over.
Mm.
So it's revenge time instead of independence. That's terrible.
Yeah, it is. It's a complete, what you call it, a time bomb. Or what do they call that?
It's a ticking time bomb.
A ticking time bomb. But the discussion obviously has been, since we're now coming back to Kunene Hamoud.
Yeah.
Here's the weird thing. And I will always throw people to the geography of Kunene. The governor started off from a good foot, but there's also another particular negative I have to point out. The governor, technically, you could sit with the perception that he's technically a Windhoeker.
He's saying that because of the rah-rah-rah?
No, because he lived and stayed in Windhoek.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, when he left PDM, he went over back to SWAPO, and then he got obviously appointed, you know, back in the start of this year, after the president's inauguration, as the governor.
The governor of Kunene region, yeah.
Now, many people can, just from what I'm citing, then deduce and say, yeah, so he's not actually a Kunene resident. Well, I don't know to that extent whether or not, yes or not, he is. However, what I can cite is specifically that, obviously, you know, he recognizes himself as someone that can help Kunene or can contribute to Kunene. I'm also not his private spokesperson, just to cite that. Just to cite that.
Thank you for clarifying that part.
I'm just laying down facts in terms of observations.
Yeah.
Now, he starts, okay, the director general starts from a perspective, Helmut. You've got 5 minutes to go before, you know, your live read.
Mm-hmm.
The director general Mbwende, who was also present there, cited a notion of decentralization. Remember when we did the Decentralization Act?
Mm-hmm.
At the start of this
year. Decentralization was emphasized a lot.
Yeah. I, however, sit with a little bit of a reservation here. When the governor Muaruko started with his speech, he cited that his region has a per capita income of 2,000 Namibian dollars only. Now, to me, 2,000 Namibian dollars actually reinforces when you and I looked into the labor force survey at the start of the year as well.
We're not talking about this whole GDP thing, are we?
Well, we actually can get into the GNI thing, the gross national income.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Which is based literally GDP, which is also based upon GDP to an extent, because it's just the opposite of GDP. you take GDP, that number per capita, mm-hmm. per person in Namibia, and you divide it by how many people, you know, 12 months in a year, or what you get, and then you find out how much every Namibian is supposed to get. But when you obviously go look into the statistics that the NSA pulls up, because he obviously pulled this from the NSA,
yeah.
the NSA would tell you, if you look at the actual productivity of the country, not government, of the country, and you take each region, you measure the regions between them as each other, he cites that they have a major sort of like a developmental pathway to walk. 2,000 Namibian dollars per person in that region tells you volumes. Now, where's police? Police is somewhere over here. Much of these other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 points is based upon health. We're not even at school yet.
Let's get let's stay on the $2,000 per person. Is it a GDP or GDI?
It will be GNI.
Yeah, GNI. Yeah. Now, I'm not very clear yet on those two terms. They make me tipsy if just by mentioning the abbreviations. And from my understanding is that you have a lot of economists that look at the GDP analysis and go like, that's a very terrible way of measuring a country or a region's economic activities. Mm. Especially if you're talking about, the livelihood, the conduciveness and goodness in the livelihood of the people in this area.
Yeah.
There's one economist lady who pointed out that, actually it's high time we start shifting from GDP to, is it PPP, purchasing power parity or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone's ability to afford stuff. I think, when we start measuring stuff with that, we are going to answer a lot of questions. Because, you can say, okay, according to GDP in terms of, in terms of the stuff that we produce and sell per year, if we can divide it based on the population that we have, every person would get $2,000, would get $2,000. But then that brings us to the question that you always ask every time we bring this up. Any Namibian will look at you in the face and go like, $2,000, where's mine?
But here's the thing, Hamoud. The first indication, because I can really see it's going to be a long, long, long walk to freedom or development or to some sort of like being scaled up aspect for Kunene, is when you start from basic things like getting healthcare to as many Kunene residents as possible. For example, the indications are one based upon, they've got 127,000 residents in that region. They've got 3 district hospitals, 200 plus outlets, health facility outlets, which obviously would mean that the 3 district hospitals is part of the 200. So not to say that it's 203, it's part of the 200. Obviously that positives have been cited.
Yeah.
Now, when the positives are being cited, this obviously means that 32 to 33 years before 2025, so I'm talking about from 2023 downwards, things were not looking so good for poor. Because the governor also cited that they continuously have cholera and malaria outbreaks. They recently had cholera back in last month. It was between 7 and 15 people from what he cited there in his address.
That speaks into the health aspect.
Yeah. It still stays in the health aspect. We quickly have an ad break, dear listeners, and we're going to come back right after this.
Yeah. It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back, but before we continue, let's take a live read. This is a ShopRite live read. Get the hottest deals on all your spirit needs this winter at your favorite ShopRite liquor shop. Get 4 200 milligrams triple wood blended Scotch whiskey for just 200 Namibian dollars. Scottish Collie whiskey for 174 Namibian dollars and 99 cents each. 154 Namibian dollars and 99 cents each for Smirnoff 1818 vodka. Or a Rock Bay Spice Rum. And a Rock Bay Spiced Rum. And a Gordon's Gin for only 169 Namibian dollars and 99 cents. ShopRite Liquor Shop. Hot deals at low prices. Alcoholic beverages. Not for sale to persons under the age of 18.
It's actually a good thing, Helmut, you mentioned the purchasing power parity discussion. Because in Windhoek or in the Commerce region, there are certain things that we take for granted.
For example?
Transport, access to health facilities, whether it be public or private. I mean, even just in basics of being able to move from one point to the next, you know, having that convenience of knowing that around every corner, did you take a cab, Hamid?
Every day.
I know every day, but I'm talking about now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Look at that. Access to that as well. That's a service provider providing you with a service.
Yeah.
You paid for it. The governor cites a particular thing at almost when he gets to the end of the health recap that firstly, they've got a lot of vacancies for in the public health sector because there's an unwillingness by professionals, whether they just recently came out of the universities or the training colleges, to work in remote areas. So I'm talking about, remember when you went and did your tsumkwe situation with your bush salary?
Bush allowance. Love that part.
Bush allowance. And I'm
I sat there thinking,
going like, we obviously have to ask the question in terms of, are these predominantly women that would say no? But it actually makes a fair case because when I say a fair case, Hamid, you and I probably would not, as men, we would not have an issue knowing that there's an extra allowance, like a bush allowance to help you coordinate in the bush during the week. And then obviously you come in most Saturday and Sunday, you come to the town and come and try and see some civilization and you go back to the very obvious lack of it.
Civilization, seriously?
Back in the bush. Many parts is just for you to see electricity, bruh. But yeah.
You sound like a British back then.
I'm almost sounding like, what was that guy's name that wrote the book Heart of Darkness? George. No, Henry Fielding. Is it Henry Fielding? Apparently that book, Helmut, was the reason why Chinua Achebe wrote Things Fall Apart. You have to understand back then in the 1800s, you know, when the Europeans come here, they come and say, yeah, it's really the continent of darkness. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Thanks.
Great stuff. Doesn't seem the British left from Cape Town, yeah, but yeah, great stuff. So yeah, just to cite that a little bit. So yeah, he did say that there was a hurdle because speaking about building a facility to meet a need, the facility obviously needs to have a purpose if you've got personnel in the facility to give the service.
Yeah.
Now, he noted secondary road networks are dodgy. Okay, he used a different word, the governor. I would call it dodgy. It's not the first time I've heard, you know, trying to reach really remote communities in Kunene is a challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, last year when I did the particular engagement with the Kunene correspondent that we've got there, Eagle FM, with Kambaikwa, he noted that sometimes they are like superbly remote communities and your best guess of getting there is either through your own 2x2 horsepower or through a horseback or through a, you know, a donkey or something, but a car definitely sometimes won't make it. Which obviously shows you the challenge of that region. And the unwillingness of people to be appointed to work in the health, public healthcare sector to dispense the service is a concern. Now, one thing is, I don't know, does it mean that Opuo or Korejas have to start, you know, attracting casinos to have, you know, with
gambling? Are you kidding?
It doesn't matter, man. It's a thriving business, you know. Somewhere, haven't you seen those movies? Those very dodgy Western movies. And there's the biggest establishment in the town is, you know, the one with the watering hole facilities.
Now that you put it that way,
that's what happens in small towns, dude. The guys that attract the most business are the ones with the watering hole capabilities. Okay, them and obviously usually the religious institutions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, not that I'm putting them together. I just did put them together, but just citing.
Well, they operate around the same principle, you know, making promises that may or may not come through. Yeah.
Or the one provides medium for said promises to occur, and the other one provides the medium or platform
for $1 here, and you could win $1 million.
At least it comes at the expense of your pocket.
Yeah.
Not anything else. But yeah, we were still, yeah, you were still saying, Amud, on your side in terms of what you observed.
Yeah. And, okay, two things. The, the exact word used there was intergenerational. So then I added on my own interpolitical affiliation because, when was that? It was, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. I don't know why we had to go so far, Hamoud, with interpolitical.
No, 3 weeks ago. I remember reading an article coming out of Kunene region where there was some kind of political tit for tat going on there, you know, and some opposition parties, who reportedly lashed out over sudden end of drought relief without consultations and stuff like that. Now, the thing is, one of the accusations that came out was that some political parties are using drought relief or basically any cheap political card they can use to persuade the public to join them. Now, more often when these things takes place in the political sphere, it's kind of very difficult to split between what's really taking place on the ground what's being alleged. But it seemed to be very tense that the governor Muharuka himself came out and sort of like explained that. Here's the thing. That's not happening. And then came up with also, his version of what is taking place. There's a lot of political tit for tat that was taking place anyway. Which is very common in politics.
Yeah.
Basically, that's the nature of politics. But, the thing is, how do you then, that's one of the questions that was, that was asked. That was asked to the councillor. But how do you then, take for example, you as a resident of a region or constituency, how do you approach someone who is in higher position, someone who is in public office? How do you approach them without worrying about the political difference between your two and the possibility of it getting in between the grievances that you are going to, that you're going to give them?
Yeah.
And, as a political leader, as someone who has a specific political affiliation and you are in public office, governor, council, for example, how do you, matured enough to sit across the table, as a public, in a public office capacity to listen to the grievances that are being brought to you by an individual or group of people that from a, that are from a different political party. Now that was you know, that's when they went, oh yeah, I know it's touchy, but we're gonna have to talk about it. I'm like, my man. But now now the intergenerational part is one that was also highly emphasized. That one was about you know the whole getting youth involved. So culturally, now this is actually one thing that I think is somewhat a little painful when it, when you look at our culture and the modern Western leadership structure that we've adopted. Now that is culturally, I don't know. Now I know in my culture, when an adult is talking, you are supposed to just say yes, sir. Now,
put an asterisk.
I'm not talking
there.
About Tama 2000. But, yeah,
we'll put an asterisk there, bro. Usually, yeah. I would always just listen and then zone out, and then, you know.
Actually, look, actually, that's part of the problem. Now, how can someone take, for example, who is a, you know, who is a boomer, for example, who is in public office? How do they set? How do you know? How can they position themselves in a way that they are approachable by Ama 2K? Now, and also, and also, Ama 2K and millennials. How can we make sure that when we are in the presence of a boomer, how do we create that the environment they are willing to respect us? Because it's not a one-way street. You respect someone who is older than you or younger than you if they are in public position, and they also have to reciprocate that respect so that there is this open atmosphere for you to communicate.
Basically, rapport.
So now the painful thing about why I brought up the cultural aspect is that according to the World Health, World Health Organization, the HPV, cervical cancer caused by HPV is very high in sub-Saharan Africa, and
which is the reason why the supposed rollout was supposed to take place.
We don't talk about there are topics that are considered taboo in African culture, and sexual intercourse is one of those topics. I can't now sitting across the table with your daughter and she's talking to you about her boyfriend in African culture, the way that she's gonna run out of that house, but look, now the point is,
things happen, I know, Helmut.
It happens. That's the point, Dwight. It's happening, but we are not talking about it. Now, for us to actually, make sure that our loved ones, especially the, especially women, have access to the medicine that they need for this type of, for this type of problems, there must be that open conversation. Because if I'm yelling at my daughter because she, I found a suspicious SMS in her phone, first of all, what the heck am I doing there? Two, if you are yelling at her because, you just saw her walking with a guy, that means, if she does something intimate with that guy, she's never going to tell you. Now, that means if she contracts any type of STD from him, you are not hearing it. Until it's late when they go to the hospital and then they are diagnosed with, with cancer. What's the thing is, especially, when it comes to things
ask,
like,
where does cervical, how did you get
exactly,
cervical cancer?
Exactly.
And then the doctor tells you, don't worry, she's been active.
I was like, this one? No, we go to church every Sunday.
Never, I always, she never leaves, what do you call that thing? She never leaves my side. Yeah. And then the doctor goes
actually, when you put it that way, it even sounds more creepy. She never leaves.
I know. I apologize. It does sound creepy. It really sounds creepy.
Really creepy. Really
creepy. But then, Helmut, here's the thing. This brings me back to the interview I did last year.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't last year. The year before. With the general manager or the CEO of the Cancer Association. He's also been interviewed by our colleague, Happy Juju, on previous editions of the On the Radar. I interviewed him about the understanding in the broader Namibian context regarding cancer.
Yeah.
And does it seem like cancer is becoming more prevalent in all manner of Namibian life? So I'm talking about all groups, all tribes, all ethnicities.
Yeah.
And he said yes. Because in many cases, just like what you now encapsulated, is that people don't talk to each other about real issues. No. And we've got an ad break creeping up on us.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great-tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Coming back, dear listeners, it's about quarter past the hour of five, meaning past the top of the hour. You are in your drive time company, which is always from 4:30 to 6. This is the Home Run. This is Eagle FM. Welcome if you've just switched on. We're back if you've been listening since the get-go or since the start. And you were still saying how much specifically in terms of the understanding, the communication, the rapport of things.
Yeah.
Because obviously it tries to match what the governor cited in terms of, you know, let me first consult my notes. He notes the orthopedic services are now accessible in the public health facilities, dental services, even mental health services. Even though we're sitting with just still two mental health facilities from the state.
Speaking of two mental health facilities, you didn't finish the Cancer Association of Namibia.
So in the cancer scenario, Mr. Rolf Hansen pointed out there in that engagement that I had with him in 2023. No, it was last. Well, one of the two years.
Mm-hmm.
He indicated specifically that, and I've seen this personally myself, between my mom and her siblings and obviously her cousins, in terms of how let me call them what they are. The baby boomers, how the baby boomers treat the other generations after them.
Yeah. So
the generations after them is the Gen X, then us, the millennials, because you're a millennial.
Yeah.
And then the Gen Zs. So everyone after, the Gen Xs, you know, they were the guys that were walking a tightrope with the boomers. But the boomers are the ones that sit with the idea of, you know, things worked for me, they should work for you. Meaning, if I had to walk 5 kilometers to get somewhere,
you should also walk the same distance,
in pain, you should also walk the 5 kilometers. Which obviously shows you a great breakdown in understanding. Because, just like you explained the discussion regarding the difference between generations, which is probably also a feeding factor or a reinforcing element of why there are so many potentially things wrong in certain parts of the country, is probably because you've got to look at the presence in terms of what leadership you can get in each of the regions or each of the particular scenarios. Now, I have to add in a extra little tidbit here, Helmut. The governor that we covered yesterday, Pion Gunate, is the only one that has retained his job. Everyone else is new. Brand spanking new. So even the governor that sits with most of the particular economic developments in Karas, the previous governor, Aletta Frederick, she was replaced. So there's now a new person in the south, in the Karas region. So obviously, remember she was the one last year where her councillors didn't show up when we did the state of the region.
And why didn't they show up?
Because they boycotted her giving the report.
Which is why when she, we all know at this point, one of the reasons why they didn't show up is because of political reasons.
Exactly.
Which is why at the beginning of her speech, she cited the act. Yeah, the excuse they gave was that, she doesn't have the power.
Or the lawful
power to do what she was doing.
And she said,
the first thing she did was point to the pieces of legislation that gives her the power to do that.
Yeah.
Which made it clear to everyone that, this had nothing to do with the Constitution, has it?
Exactly nothing. This was just, once again, political strategy being deployed or being employed or being used. And it was actually a sad scenario because they were literally boycotting a run-of-the-mill exercise. You know, it's like, have you ever seen church leaders argue with each other when they've got their own politics happening? Have you ever seen that? Have you ever seen that? They all go sit on the same altar. They all look like, no, there's nothing wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know what happens when they walk
behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes, how they argue in the little meeting rooms at church.
Yeah.
Which is actually the best format of leadership you're supposed to see.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with teachers. When I grew up, Helmut, you didn't see that the teachers won.
Teachers exchanging blows in front of students.
Never. Okay, you used to see it on the female teachers' faces in terms of their dissatisfaction with decisions that were made. Because in many cases, they were just sort of like, you know, obviously unhappy about something. Because something happened at break time.
You
come back to class at break as a kid.
And for some
reason, the teacher's personality went like from being, you know, professional and assisting you before break. And it flipped 360 degrees. Even though it might be facing the same direction after that flip, but it was a completely different person that you meet because the person was just unhappy. So when I saw such instances, and I always used to ask, what would happen to some of these guys? Okay, I had a theory. I won't mention it on air because I think it was something personal that happened at home. And then the teachers, they show up with that attitude at school and now it becomes your issue. You, the learner.
Yeah.
But the thing was specifically in the address that was pointed out is that certain particular extra health services need to be extended as well. It is good, but so far from what I saw was that there should be a massive human development investment, meaning put as much resources close to the population. Install the right things in the various urban centers of Kunene, and then let's see things go from there. First and foremost, Helmut, I have a sneaky, super sneaky suspicion, and I'm gonna mention out loud, is that the people, you know, our favored, because through you, obviously, our favored, you know, economic participants, are the majority in that region. Teachers, police, and medical, public health staff.
Yeah.
I have a sneaky suspicion they are the largest
civil servant.
Salaried people. We have to be obvious and to be deliberate about the analysis.
Yeah,
because
but that obviously boils down to what services are offered. Being, yeah. What services are present in this area?
Yeah.
So some of the and the more economically impoverished a place is, then you know the more it's basically very easy to predict what services are being offered. It's most likely you are most likely to think about just the basic services like health facilities,
education, public safety.
Yeah. Yes, public safety. Yeah, the police, for example. Yeah.
Yeah. The downside of the summit, why I make that statement, that suspicion, that statement of suspicion, is because, and I didn't even go and cite the NSA mapping, census mapping report that they did for Kunene.
Yeah.
Now the census mapping report, Helmut, goes and looks at each building in the region. Now I remember back in terms of doing the analysis is that many regions outside of Kunene, outside of Comas, Erongo, Ochotonjupa, and there was another region. There are too many regions that have a large public sector dominance in terms of the businesses, the supposed services and activities that are supposed to be for the economy, that speak towards economic activity. You find that a lot of them, for example, are predominantly state-owned. Now, I had a lovely discussion with someone that studied political science. It's a family member. I love it when I've got access to such free knowledge.
Info. Oh, yeah,
free
yeah.
Knowledge every day. Every day. Because I bounce ideas for our discussions of my siblings. It was explained to me, a government should not rent or enter rental agreements. Most governments in the world prefer to directly own their immovable assets. So immovable is everything building, everything land. Because that is how the said particular government aims to achieve its own particular service provision. Because
so you can't be talking about solving housing when you don't have a house.
Exactly, Helmut. Exactly. You can't be talking about solving mass housing if you've got, let's for example say a whole bunch of, let's say let's say 150,000 from the 300,000 backlog, ne? 150,000 are all public sector or public servants, ne?
Yeah.
And you are forcing them to go and rent. There is no housing that you can give the
everyone else, the public servant, yours, yeah.
The public servant, and you know, you're not solving it. Now the nice thing is, I saw in that, what is that, that extension of Kommersdal behind Augustinium? Those are most predominantly Nampol houses.
Yeah, that's 27.
Yeah, Kommersdal 27, right? I loved that idea, but that was also once again just targeting just the police.
Yeah.
Just the police. Now, here's the thing, Hamoud. It's not just about accommodation for the police. The police need bigger police stations. They need renovations at their police stations. They need, in many cases, even more prisons in the country.
Yeah.
Now, here's another scenario as well. Also to fact in why I made the statement, why I suspect that the salaried public servant is the largest driver of economic activity in the region of Kunene, mm-hmm. is before, in between the health analysis that the governor gave, he mentioned there, he thanked a local retail owner and a local retail owner and the guy in charge of public health in the region for a soup kitchen initiative. A feeding, public feeding, you know, scenario.
Yeah.
Where he noted that the soup kitchens, the community soup kitchens need to stay open. Now that immediately tells me, and it reinforces the first statement regarding the $2,000 of per capita income
yeah.
for the region. Why the governor said that there is no disposable income for residents in the region. They, if they receive any money, they buy food immediately.
Straight to expenses and...
No, it's just food. They spend money on food, and then from there, there's no disposable income. Now, either this tells me that, firstly, the public sector, the private sector's financial service providers are deliberately staying away from Kunene, you know, trying to make money available for any kinds of projects in the region, or that they've also gone and look at, you know, what actually is happening in Kunene. Because Helmut, if I explain to you, okay, I'll use our screen there. Imagine this platform is Kunene. If you come in with the road, national highway, in this corner is Ochu. Over here, you've got Korekgas and Fransfontein on the other side of it. And the highway splits up going northwards, and here you find Opuo. And above Opuo, there's a highway that runs to, is it Ruakana or Epupa? Both, one of the two particular settlements as well. Here in the middle, it's an absolute vacuum of complete and utter stillness.
Now,
we need to find a way of connecting the dots.
Unless you look at the economic activities, I think, which I think it's very simple to do. Looking at the economic activities as a business individual, unless your business plan is in the direction of retail, unless you are looking at selling clothes, and these are, the people in this part of the country can buy, and or groceries, it's kind of difficult to run any other business out of that, because no disposable income means it's very difficult for you to take activities there, for example, a movie theater.
Yeah, but
like after buying food and clothes, I don't have money for a movie. Even if you try to subsidize it, you just be sinking yourself into poverty.
Mm.
Now, again, this is a very every time I think about that, I come back to the point that you like making, that there's a reason why we don't have Ferrari and Lamborghini dealerships in Namibia.
Mm.
Because the question is, how many of us can afford a car, let alone a high-end sports car?
Mm.
Point of correction. How many of you can afford a car, let alone a high-end sports car? I know I can afford one. Now, Yeah, so all these things are basically factored in. And every business, it's not that a businessman does not want to invest in a set of, you know, a specific part of the region, you know, part of the country's region or a continent's country, like Namibia, for example.
Mm.
The question is, is there a market? Unless you are one of, unless you are one of those, was that transient? Unless you are thinking in that type of business model where you want to study a market and find out what they can afford and then build a product that is tailored to their source of income, to what they can afford.
Mm.
Then you can, then you can run a business in an area like that. But if you can't tailor your product to the source of income, to the average source of income of that part of the country or that part of the continent, you are not going to run any business. Now, a lot of people tech companies, you can imagine a lot of tech companies try to sell their, Apple, maybe Samsung, Huawei, they try to reach the market that transient trying to reach. Except they didn't. Why? It's because they had a product with a specific price tag, and they wanted those people that can barely afford bread to buy that product. And everyone was like, okay, yeah, no, I'm not buying that. I'd rather buy bread and eat with my family at home than, just save up for a fancy phone, which I'm not going to eat anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you just build a tailored product, that was transient, right? The Chinese tech company that making smartphones that's specifically tailored for the African market.
I am skeptical of the name that you're using. It starts with trans something, but not transient.
I'm just thinking AI here.
yeah, because transient sounds very AI-ish.
Very AI-ish. Yeah, now.
Transient,
something like that. So, obviously, look, the point is, these guys came up with a very interesting business model.
Mm.
That instead of, sticking to what you're building and crossing your fingers and hoping that the market that you're taking the product to can afford it, how about you first of all, study the environment and find out what's the average source of income? What can they afford? And then whatever product that you want to sell them, you build it, you put in the investment that can, that will allow you to sell at a price that this market can afford without putting yourself out of business.
Mm.
That's a genius business model.
Yeah, it is.
Because a lot of us just cross our fingers and hope that, the whole exclusive type of, if you can't afford it, then you are not the target market.
No, it's not exclusive, Helmut, because when you look at market segmentation, the philosophy behind it, you have a product for everyone. Which I ultimately means there's a product that is at such a low price anyone can possibly afford it.
Yeah.
Then you get middle range products, for example, to try and say, listen, if you earn or you don't want to have the same product as everyone else, and you want something just a step above, we make it a little bit more expensive for you. Here's something else for you. This could be the same product or this could be a completely different product with different features. And ultimately, you've got the high end particular products, obviously, that are meant for certain target markets. Now, when you classify or categorize targets like that in market segmentation, I say philosophy of market segmentation, because in media, the opposite happens. I only came up with that light bulb moment this morning in the shower. Ask me why I came up with it today, Hamid. Not the location. In terms of the philosophic thought.
No, I don't have money for therapy to think about the location.
Yeah.
But,
it was based upon when you had to look at the histories behind many media companies, even in Namibia.
Yeah.
Everything is backwards to front. No, really, Hamid. In many cases, the media owners started something without any prior media or without any prior market research.
To try and find out what market do I want to reach?
Exactly.
Or what market is available so that I can tailor my product towards them.
And it's mostly based off a one sentence analysis. It's either there's nothing like what the idea I have,
mm-hmm.
which is unique. You have to come up with something unique.
Yeah.
And that's something that can appeal to many people, meaning mass appeal.
Yeah.
Or you bring in a completely different product, but also serves the same purposes. But in media, it's the only sector where the installation works backwards to front.
You're dealing like with, you know, the reverse of what happens in the market.
Yeah.
Description you just made.
Yeah. So ultimately, just what I tell you, the opposite exists in Namibia when it comes to that thing that you and I love making jokes of, the Peugeot discussion.
Oh, yeah. So we're like, no, we are bringing development.
Yeah. And then no one knows where the thing will be bought. However, in media ownership, in media business, you know, establishing a media enterprise, you can start backwards to front. You don't have to. You're just going to hit and hope that people follow you.
Right. That's not the most painful thing about Peugeot. That's what I thought was the most painful until you pointed out that our target market was the one that was already taken over by South Africa. I was like, oh boy. That's like me, you know, buying an engagement ring for someone who's already married. Like
that's like you telling someone, come and take a bank account at my bank institution, and the person already has a bank account. Well, that does happen, obviously.
Oh no. The marriage example makes excellent sense because the husband will look at you and go like, okay, so whatever minaji twa you are planning here.
It's definitely going to be to my negative.
It's going to be to my negative. I think this brings us back to the politicization of things because reading through the SME Bank from Mr. Chauvin's book, reading through the SME Bank Rise and Fall, you can basically see that you can easily suspect that a lot of political appeal was at the forefront of, you know what, let's just go there and give them this type of development so we can gain large masses without first looking at through the plan that if we want to build something long term, what do we have to consider? Now, the central bank was reluctant to give them a license because they were looking at it from an accounting and financial perspective. But a lot of people that were now at this, at the forefront from a political political and public office standpoint, even though the central bank officials also, public office, it's just that a lot of people, that are above in terms of power structure for the, above the central bank, they were looking at it from a political standpoint. The central bank leadership was looking at it from a financial standpoint. It didn't make a lot of financial sense, which is why they gave them a provisionary financial license before giving them one. And also there were a lot of what are we waiting for? Let's do this type of information coming out, coming from the executive branch mostly. And the central bank was like, well, you're the boss. And what do we end up with? Scandal.
Another
implosion.
It was a self-contained implosion.
Self-contained?
Yeah, because it didn't impact the other banks.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you say implosion, that any listener would think, okay, we're saying that the whole financial sector imploded. It didn't.
Just thank heavens.
And some of the funny thing is that Helmut, I don't think that winding up is also done yet, just like in Namibia.
Oh, yeah.
They're both not done. And it's the same two liquidators. Same guys.
These things keep becoming more and more painful.
No, but it starts looking weird because anyone else would see... look, Helmut, everyone knows in South Africa is a huge corruption issue. But South Africa's state-owned enterprises can go and borrow money on behalf of the state for their specific sectors.
Yeah, let's make sure we don't have those laws.
It's not just about not having those laws.
Yeah, let's make sure we don't do that.
The reason why I mentioned that particular scenario is that Namibia is not even on that level where our SOEs can go and borrow for capital projects directly.
And thank heavens. After Mozambique, my paranoia is way through the roof.
Instead of saying, you Ministry of Urban and Rural Development, you are in charge of borrowing for this SOE. Because the SOE can make the money back.
Yeah.
But if the SOE has a bunch of questionable leadership aspects, the SOE, unfortunately, is the one that will say, hey, brah, sorry, man. We have no no avenue in terms of believing any promises that you make. Because if the money is borrowed to just feed a get-rich-quick scheme, do you want to start with a massive headache?
So, in the, now in situations where you have SOEs, for example, and in, now you have SOEs that want, you know, that are allowed legally, you know, and they have basically that economic capacity to service debts.
Yeah.
And they go out there and, yeah, they're allowed to go out there and borrow, money just for them, like we saw with Mozambique, just specifically for, you know, to revamp their maritime infrastructure, or so they said.
Mm.
Then we know which maritime infrastructure they ended up revamping.
yeah, we know. We knew.
Like, now, when it comes to servicing the debt, it becomes a catastrophe. Now, we know that, one mistake can basically, when it's done, look, I like the decentralization aspect of it.
Mm.
But when you look at it from the angle of if someone screws up, it becomes a national issue.
Yeah.
Because a lot of investors withdrew early out of the Mozambican economy because they didn't want to service the debt that someone selfishly borrowed, and then they didn't invest the money, then started using it for their own personal gratifications.
How do you blow $2 billion US Amut?
That's selfishness. I mean, that's selfishness to the core.
No, that's why I'm asking you, Amut. In Namibia, two billion is $40 billion Namibian dollars. How do you blow $2 billion US
you must
in
have,
your economy?
You must have a lot of. I highly doubt some most of that money was blown in that economy. One thing that
I know that the former finance minister went and lived in Johannesburg.
Of all places, that guy's terrible at running.
That's how he got caught. Everything started was with him. Because he got caught, arrested by the South African Police Service because of the Interpol, warrant against him.
Yeah.
And then he was extradited back to his country.
Yeah. Look, some of these mistakes are mistakes you'd expect to be made by kids in kindergarten. But when it's being made, a bunch of guys in that involved in that Mozambican, you know, tuna bond scandal, including their finance minister, these are academically inclined guys. Like, these are financial experts, accountants. And then they use their expertise to chop money instead of investing. So that's actually what's more painful. But coming back to Kunene. Not just Kunene, but any region that anyone, you know, any business person wants to invest in, they have to look at, I think it's a very basic business model. If you are going to put money in this business venture, are you going to make it back? Are you going to make the money back? If the answer is no, no one in their right mind would just, because it's not a charity.
No, it's not.
No?
No, it's not.
As much as I want to take my money and take it, as much as I want to take my money, even if I was a millionaire. Yeah. As much as I want to develop a place like Divundu, for example.
Yeah.
I will obviously, the first question I'll ask myself is, what business am I going to run in this place? What business is possible to run in this place? And if I'm going to take this amount of money and invest it in this, am I going to make it out back?
Mm.
Because if the answer is no, I am from that area, but I'm not going to take that risk.
Okay, Amut, on the light side. Earlier today, I saw a small social media update about Divundu where two elephants were seen. Just outside, just so that you know. Just
as a light side.
And apparently, road users must take caution with regards to said particular wildlife.
Look, the light side would have been, one of them kicked the bucket and now everyone is having a early Christmas type. That would have been a light side. But
no, but, you know, they were looking like concerned, you know, residents of the bush there, you know, in terms of the video that was taken. Oh. In terms of being too close to the road.
Do you have an idea how many times I've run into elephants looking after cattle?
No, Helmer. Literally, they were looking after the kettle.
No, I'm looking after kettle. Then you run into... I mean, the elephant's looking after my kettle. That would be weird. But
no, because I've heard how elephants technically are a little bit of... They are major bullies, especially...
They are very territorial, yeah.
Yeah, especially against hippos. Especially against hippos, buffalo. There's another large mammal that they also have issues with. It's hippo, buff... Even... No, they leave giraffes alone, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but one thing I know is, I mean, one thing that you basically know, if you, anyone that grew up around animals, is even if around cattle, knows that any animal, when they have, when they just had a calf, they're very aggressive. It's a maternal instinct. So, and elephants travel in herds. So, chances are very high they have small ones with them, and that's when you, do you want to stay out of the way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, getting back to Kunene, who also has elephants, the obvious scenario here has been the aspect in terms of sorting out local, sort of like local developmental issues.
Yeah.
Now, the reason why I cited the community soup kitchens and the earnings and the disposable income discussion and the aspect in terms of, you know, ensuring that some aspect of public or overall public resilience is achieved is that, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, but the nurses, there was a group of nurses that got specific malnutrition training.
Huh?
Yes, Hamoud. I also went, watching the report.
Nutritionist?
No, a nurse... A bunch of nurses got malnutrition handling training. How to respond to someone suffering malnutrition or undernourishment?
Oh, yeah. That makes sense because, one thing that you're told is that if you have not eaten for an extended period of time, don't just gobble up anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people are smiling or try not to laugh. But, obviously, yes.
So if you run into someone that have not eaten for several days.
Yeah. Firstly, they need some liquids as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't just give them,
food,
Yeah.
Because somewhere situations might become difficult for them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not ask where, please, guys. We're still trying to maintain our family logo here.
Of being and family I friendly. Still want my salary month end. Yeah.
So, when you also have to look at that scenario, I get an aspect also that there is not much of in terms of a diverse nutritional dietary scenario being availed or being accessed by the locals in the Kunene region. Now, you and I know Kunene suffers very easily from, when a drought hits.
It's very arid.
Yeah, it's the drought hits hard in Kunene.
Yeah.
So that obviously points off to point one. You cited a little bit earlier in terms of when the councillor was interviewed, the discussion about the drought relief. Here's the thing.
Oh, I had a whole show. I had my whole morning show on that one. It was fun.
Here's the funny thing, Amun.
Yeah.
A little bit earlier back in last month, because last month was literally last week. Not last week, but the week before last week. The Prime Minister indicated that drought relief will end now, in this week of August, in certain parts of the country. Drought relief across the country, the absolute deadline was last week, the 31st, and drought relief for certain regions will end in the 8th, the 8th of August, end of this week specifically. When you look at scenarios like that, about when does drought relief end, and who were beneficiaries of drought relief, specifically Kunene, the two Kavangos, Omaheke, Komas, were the first particular sort of like majorly struck regions. The drought relief obviously meant that you did not have food and you needed a supplementation. But for a level to reach the one in terms of that, medical staff in the region should know how to respond to an acute
malnutrition
environmental. Well, is it environmental? environmentally induced.
Was it malnutrition?
Malnutrition.
Yeah, but the environmentally induced can factor in that when you, once you, if you're considering a place that's, very arid in comparison to a lot of regions.
Well,
because you now have to, I think before we get to the malnutrition part.
Yeah.
But, looking at it from a, nutritional, point of view.
Mm.
Let's just ask about the availability of food for a lot of people.
Yeah. That's the natural thing.
Yeah. Hence the, you know, hence the governor's appreciation for the presence of soup kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the sponsorship from the local businessman.
Yeah.
That he also thanked in the same breath. Because the thing is, Hamut, why I asked that particular question, is that you can obviously realize that with something, with certain particular groups in Namibia, they have a large dependency on subsistence farming, which is either you are someone that grows something or you've got livestock. And Kunene has got that, the livestock component in abundance, which obviously means that people were struck or they were, you know, when malnutrition set foot in or set got hold in their communities, it might have been a scenario because their animals were not producing enough milk.
Were they getting, were the animals getting enough food?
Food, and which was grazing, and water.
How is the rain?
Well, how is the rain for you? Yes. And which is also a scenario in terms of, did a lot of the animals die because of lack of grazing, i.e. the drought? And, you know, to what extent did they suffer, did their herds suffer?
Yeah.
So we get the insights into that. I am, however, on a lighter note, Hamut, very surprised to find out that vehicle clearance activities had to take place in Otjiwarongo. You have to drive a whole 400 k's
from one region to another
to go and do a vehicle clearance in Otjiwarongo. The second was also,
wouldn't it just be easy to go with, you know, okay, to go with Erongo? I mean, they're just neighbors.
Yeah, but that's the thing. You have to follow where
the
national highway system flows. I know that there is probably a secondary road, a gravel
road somewhere
that probably runs from Korejas or from Fransfontein into Erongo.
Yeah.
But then are you coming through another national park? Because, what was that guy's name? You've got a lot of tourists that love that scenic route. They would drive in from South Africa, from Cape Town.
Yeah.
Then they go here from,
along the Namib Desert.
Yeah, but I don't know if they come through Lüderitz or if they come through Mariental. Then they go into the Namib Naukluft National Park. And then you can drive along the coast from there into Walvis, into Swakop, into Henties, and then up Henties into the rest of the Skeleton Coast above. I just don't know if they'll be able to turn somewhere west, you know, eastwards to go to Fransfontein and Korejas. I just don't know.
Oof.
And remember, Kunene region is on the blocks to be home to the third green hydrogen phase on that coastline of Kunene. Apparently it was apparently, because I'm still trying to find concrete designated policy documentation and, a hint in a policy is there. I call it a hint in a policy. Other particular indications are based upon finding concrete documents that lay out concrete stakeholder engagement and concrete, you know, planning that indicates what this thing would look like. Otherwise, it'll just stay a pipe dream for as long as it can come.
Yeah.
Reason being is, like you cited now, right there, wouldn't it have been easier to go into Erongo?
Yeah.
But I will ask the same question to the government that the governor asked. Why don't they have their own particular centralized scenario of service provision?
Yeah.
Based upon the decentralization concept.
And you're right. Talking about decentralization, it really brings up a lot of questions around why they don't have their own regional office, similar to a regional service provision, especially coming out of the public sector, that they can access within their region. Because, first of all, Cornelia is huge.
No, Cornelia is massive, Amo.
Yep.
Sparsely populated. The 127,000 people. It's either there's a great majority of them living somewhere in the bush, just like Kavango West.
That's one. That's one of the comparisons I made.
Mm.
Two of my regions, Kavango East and West, can fit in Kunene.
Really? Together?
Uh huh.
Is that how big the thing is?
Kunene is huge.
Kunene is massive.
Kunene is massive.
Okay. We retract our...
So, the fact that...
I retract my overall misunderstanding.
So if they have to drive out of the region to go to other regions for some, for services that, all other regions or all other people access within their region.
Mm.
Someone did not look up Kunene on the map.
Because no, they didn't.
I don't know what they were thinking because, this was on my way to town. Was just try to look up the map.
Mm.
That's when I also realized that, we also missed somewhat the same thing yesterday with Omaheke.
Mm.
Almost similar size.
Yeah, Omaheke is big,
eh? It's huge.
Yeah.
So, if you are going to have, if you are going to have a region that size, you're going to make sure they have at least one or even two places that can, that places they can easily access.
Mm.
So if you live in, they are surrounded by, by several neighbors. You have Erongo here and they have, Oshodonjupa. Yeah. So that explains why people would rather just, drive to Oshivarongo.
Yeah.
That's because it's massive. But if you are at the border between Namibia and Angola, on the other hand, Oshodonjupa and Erongo are very far. So the nearest you have are the other northern O regions. So, I didn't look at Kunene region's map until today. Actually, I didn't focus much on the size of the regions until today. That's when I was like, boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are massive. Like, Zambezi can fit into Kunene like 10 times. Yeah, but they have their own centralized, government offices that they can just access without, driving all the way to Rundu. Because that would be their nearest, regional, not regional, because they'll be in a whole different region.
Mm.
So, the malnutrition discussion for me seems to be an alarm bell for a lot of regional, more like public office representatives, of why we should really look into agriculture. Now, looking at the arid conditions of the Kunene region, that brings up again the discussion of if you are going to practice agriculture, how should you practice it in a way that, every time there's a drought, you are faced with the harsh reality of having to watch your crops and animals die.
Mm.
There's a river, but then it's in the far north, the border between Namibia and Angola. Now, if you are going to use that as a main source of irrigation, you better hope you are closest to the river. You are closest to that river.
Mm.
Now, how much underground water do we have? What's our strength as a region? Now, I think every time that we talk about these things, I can't help but just go like being a public office individual, like a governor, councillor, or even traditional authority, for example, it's a massive undertaking. Because you have all these natural challenges that are standing in between you and taking care of your people, and you have to navigate them. It's not like Mother Nature is going to be like, "I know I'm going to be nice to you." Nope. You obviously have to implement means to deal with these challenges.
I'll actually put that, Helmut, down to availability of financial resources.
Well, doesn't it all come down to financial resources?
Yeah. The reason why I say that is because it sounds all good, because the governor himself also cited, you know, something will be done here, an allocation of a budget will be done there. I was like, how many times have we heard the story of budget is not budgeting? The budget is not budgeting, or certain particular things are just not happening.
Yeah, we made plans, but...
But, you know, we said something somewhere.
But.
So, I'm slightly skeptical. When I say slightly skeptical...
Yeah, and you have every right, because it's... Look.
I had to say that, because, you know, when it comes down to money, and specifically about being able to do something...
Yeah.
Citing, yes, a new... What was that thing? I mean, okay, the governor didn't indicate how long it took for those police stations to be built, for example.
Yeah.
Nah? And the image that you and I saw was that those police stations looked like they were built from prefabricated materials.
Yep.
They were pretty easy. So, I can see...
Which is a genius move, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful.
At least you have something.
Absolutely wonderful. The downside is, does it translate to you trying to do the same thing across the country? Or across the region?
Refurbs?
Not country. Yeah, refurbs. I mean, look how long it took. Actually, the lack of no refurbs, for example, for the Minister of Justice.
Yeah. Well, there was a budget allocation for it. It's just that, well, someone went Mozambique on it. And now...
Hey, No one went Mozambique. It's not a Johnny English movie,
look,
please.
Look,
you can't say he went Mozambique or someone.
Look, again, I think that is why I think it's very safe to point to... it's very good to have a compartmentalized power structure, because... Decentralized power, we have learned a very long time ago, is the best way to practice power. It's not perfect, but it works in comparison to centralized one, where only one guy is making all the decisions, because, well, then you have, the selfishness of monarchs going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but then, oversight, the challenges that comes with decentralized, decentralized power is oversight. And having to do that oversight in, in time that makes sense. You don't want to check up on someone, you don't want to check up on someone, to see how much, how they invested the money that you gave them in 2015, which is, was the case in the, fabricated courtroom, coming out of, from the standing committee, coming out of, National Assembly standing committee on the judiciary and, the judiciary, or basically the infrastructure that's used in the, that's needed for the for the dispensation of justice. Because now, if you have to drive someone to the next town every time that they have every time that they need to attend a court case, who's to blame now if there's a breakdown and now the court case are supposed to start at 8, the judge is waiting, and it's a shared courtroom, the next judge is taking over in the afternoon, and now you have to postpone the case. Then justice will be like, are you serious?
Yeah, bro. I mean, we cited so many particular scenarios in terms of that discussion what is the thing's name?
The standing committees discussion?
No, not the standing committees. But it was based upon the standing committee's particular oversight and their interventions. I mean, for any real change to happen, to ask questions whole nine years later, any person out there would ask, so where's the monitoring and evaluation capabilities?
someone should have asked that question. Why they didn't, I have no idea. So I just decided to, I just decided to go back to one of the discussions we already had. The report on the, from the National Council Standing Committee on Public Accounts and Economy. And the follow up on the regional oversight visit to Kara, Soshodonjupa, Zambezi, Kavango West, Kavango West and Oshana region on agro-processing development projects.
Mm.
Agro-processing development projects. So there are a lot of regions. Now, as you can imagine, I would imagine that every institution that's responsible for making all these plans of a way we are going to set up an agricultural project, there are certain things that they look at, like the availability, the conduciveness of setting up, such a project. Because you can't, you can't just run around setting up projects in places where they are not conducive. Because, well, then you are just doomed to fail.
Mm.
Now, seeing that, I'm just looking on the list. I'm like, doesn't Kunene have a river like the two Kavangos and the Zambezi?
Yeah.
But I don't see them on the list of, I don't see them on the list of what they called here as a, what's this, agro processing development project. Maybe that also has to factor, maybe that also has to do with, the population and how it's just scattered all across. I mean, it's all over the place. And, but, the thing is, we are looking at strength and weaknesses of all these different regions before we decide where to set up which infrastructure.
Mm.
I want to have faith that that's how we do it. I don't want to look on the dark side of Peugeot that's just a whole different scenario. But obviously at this point, it's safe to say that every governor, every constituency councillor is looking at their people and their grievances. And especially if you're a governor and you are a regional governor, you're operating on a regional level. You're looking at all these places and trying to at least to figure out how can I do my job to the best of my ability.
Mm.
And if you just, I think what would give me a headache if I was a governor is just looking at all these problems and you're like, okay, now, well, easy. We could just set up a green scheme here with whose money?
Whose money?
Yeah.
Who's going to finance it?
Whose money?
Who's going to pay for the irrigation facilities to the green scheme?
Yeah.
Actually, Helmut, Namibia is not a green country.
It's not.
So to use the word green is a misnomer even.
Okay. Just have faith.
It's not to say brown. We shouldn't use brown.
No, that's for my morning show.
brown scheme.
Look, literally brown. But look,
because Namibia is a lot more savanna than anything else.
Yeah.
So okay, we still have like 3 minutes left of today. But
oh, ready?
Yeah. We're past
6 months. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fascinating thing specifically when it comes to this discussion of the Kunene region. Kunene region's needs are way different from what we looked at Omaheke of yesterday.
Yeah.
Way different. Even though Kunene has more urban settlements than Omaheke, the unfortunate thing for Kunene is that it has got a lot of basic things to start off from. A massive investment in health. And if you need a massive investment in health, you probably need a massive investment in education.
Let me bring you back to Nkurunkuru.
Yeah.
Looking at the size of Kunene region and how you just describe using our very beautiful monitor there,
yeah,
how sparsely split up all these major areas are.
Yeah.
Setting up infrastructure in a way that you reach everyone else, a service provision or product, you will have to be very strategic.
Yeah.
Yep. You'll have to be very strategic.
You'll have to play, what's that word we played? Eeny, meeny, miny, toe. I eeny, meeny, miny, mo with one of the towns.
Yeah, because even if you have all the services in one town, some people within that region, hundreds and hundreds of kilometers away, they can't reach the services, so you have to take the services to them.
Mm.
Or they will have to travel those hundreds and hundreds of kilometers to try and access those services.
Yeah. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
I'll tell you not.
Look, for those of you that want to turn politics, to make a career out of politics, fasten a seatbelt.
I mean, it's a headache. It's that, unfortunately, that region has, man, it has so much headaches.
Yeah, I think every governor would say that.
It has so much, it'll have so much headaches because, first and foremost, if you look at the, what are the issues on the issues on the ground are so, they're so everyday, so
basic,
so, you know, how to avoid contracting cholera, meaning avoid certain water resources, or, you know, protecting yourself from malaria, meaning once again, deal with standing water. What else is there?
So you have to move people.
No, you don't have to move people because so that's also money.
Yeah, it's either you have to move people to a specific location or you have to take those, the infrastructure that of the services they need to them.
Yeah.
Now, all that requires money, which is why all discussions that we're going to have here, whether it's on a regional level, on a national level, on a continental level, when we have talked about financing in the African Union, it all boils down to one thing. We can draw up a plan. Excellent. We can travel to like the National Planning Commission did. You can travel to South Korea to sort of like study how they developed their country or whatever it is that we went there to learn. Yeah, you can. They can take you to a shipbuilding facility. They'll be like, oh, okay, they can take you to a Hyundai facility, Samsung facility. This is what we're making. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you're like, okay, well, it was nice seeing this. We're going to go back to Namibia and try to implement the same thing. How are we going to finance it?
Who's going to be the sponsor for it?
Who's going to be the sponsor?
Are you going to make the money back? Do you know that I discovered yesterday?
That takes us to the agro-processing plants.
Do you know that?
We build them.
Do you know
they're there.
I found out yesterday that Iran has its own car manufacturing companies. ICCO and Saipa.
I didn't know that. I was also shocked to learn that Iran has, I think, one of, if not the biggest shopping malls in the world.
The idea of a shopping mall comes from the Middle East.
Yeah, I know that. But the thing is, I think it's about, I think it's about information dissemination because most of the content I've consumed about the country of Iran is coming out of the Western world. And the picture that's painted is just they've given me that more like a twisted view of looking at Iran as, in the way that it's portrayed, basically the entire Middle East is, minus the Qatari and the Arab, and the Saudis. How it's portrayed. If it's a movie being shot in the Middle East, it's most likely just a bunch of huts.
Yeah.
Mud houses in the middle of the desert. But until you basically, look up these countries on your own, then you see that, they have thriving economies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
They do.
Do you know that Iran has two different sets of money?
Huh?
Yeah. Money that you find at the airport for exchange. And then you have to exchange money in the city. And then that money looks different from the money that you get at the airport.
Two countries I think we can learn from in terms of perseverance in the, in the eye of a storm are Cuba and Iran, I think. Because these countries have been under sanctions, economic blockade and stuff. But if you look at where they are economically, especially Cuba, during the COVID-19, Cuba sent doctors to Italy.
Yeah, I know. Cuba developed its own vaccine with its limited resources. And then they were blockaded further on the ingredients they needed for their vaccine.
Now, the question you have to ask yourself if you had a neighbor like that is, what if they had access to all the resources? You wouldn't stand a chance in that competition.
No, they would outproduce you. They would definitely,
oh, big time.
Definitely outproduce you.
Big time.
But on that note, guys, Helmut, we actually have to end it right there.
And
obviously, dear listeners, stay tuned for the rest of your programming in our company. Stay tuned for the business and economic segment to follow on after the break. And we'll see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.
Yebo.
The perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.